Can I be honest for a second? A lot of people who listen to this podcast already know they want to quit porn. That's not the problem. The problem is doing it consistently, when no one's watching, when it's difficult, when it's late, when you're stressed. Instead of just relying on willpower, rely on our friends at Relay. Relay gives you structure, tools, support, connection. So you're not fighting alone and starting over every week. If that sounds like what you've been missing, check it out at ftnd.org/joinrelay.
Struggling with compulsive sexual behavior or betrayal trauma can feel isolating, not just for individuals, but for partners and families too. But healing is possible, and you don't have to navigate it alone. From June 25th through the 27th in Nashville, Tennessee, the Hope for Healing Conference brings together individuals in recovery, partners, couples, and professionals for 3 days of expert insights, meaningful conversations, and real connection. You'll hear from experienced voices in the field, gain practical tools for healing, and connect with others who understand what this journey can look like. Whether you're seeking support personally or professionally, this space is designed to meet you where you are. To learn more or register, visit csbdhopeforhealing.org and use code PODCAST25 for 25% off.
Here at Fight the New Drug, we talk a lot about the impact pornography can have on mental health, relationships, sexual health, and the world around us. And if you've felt that impact personally, it's important to know this. You're not alone. That's why Relay exists. Relay is an app designed to give you real support as you work toward lasting change. It connects you with a small, private group of people who understand what you're going through, people who show up when it matters. Relay isn't about shame or judgment. It's about accountability, encouragement, and learning how to move forward together. And if anonymity matters to you, Relay has you covered. No names, just support. If you're ready to stop doing this alone, try Relay for free today at ftnd.org/joinrelay.
Lisa Frost is the co-founder of Wired Human and co-authored The Glass Between Us. In this episode, Lisa discusses her work with kids and parents to discuss the harms of pornography, the correlation between screen time and mental health, and the importance of digital literacy for youth. Lisa also shares her experience doing a 30-day digital reset, hiking on the Appalachian Trail with her family without devices, and the impact that had on their lives. With that, let's jump into the conversation. We hope you enjoy this episode of Consider Before Consuming.
Well, why don't you start off with the basics, Lisa?
Mm-hmm.
Tell us who you are, where you're from, what you're up to, why you're joining us on the podcast, all those basics.
Hi, my name is Lisa Frost. I am the co-founder of Wired Human, which is a nonprofit that raises up teens and kids to become the first line of defense against online harm and exploitation. And that is my heart and passion. That is what I do from morning till night. Outside of also being a mom and raising a bunch of littles myself, and the rest of the time I have available. I love the work of Fight the New Drug. In fact, they inspired us years ago to join with each other and a bunch of allies to launch this nonprofit years later.
Awesome.
And also, we wrote a book too on this theme. That is actually what kicked us off. The Glass Between Us is our book. My husband and I co-authored it together. And it's basically compiling all the research and ideas to use media in a value-driven way.
Why did you choose the title, The Glass Between Us?
The Glass Between Us, we chose because we feel so often devices are not necessarily bringing us together, but they can be something that divides us, where we are not as close as we could be if we were... even jumping on a phone call, being together in the same room. And oftentimes we don't always connect with what's happening behind the screen, but it influences our lives in so many ways.
Well, we will make sure to get a link and include that in the episode notes for the listeners that want to check that out. On your website, you say that you are devoted to solving the digital health crisis among the rising generation through education, research, and advocacy.
That's
great. What do you mean by the digital health crisis? Can you speak to that a little bit?
I think there's an overload of technology in our lives right now that is not just benefiting us, but is affecting our minds and hearts. Outside of working for Wired Human, we also have a partnership. We work as a contractor, my husband and I, for the University of Colorado, and we look into a lot of research. And what we are finding is that anxiety, depression, are critically connected to the screens. Now, the question is always, is there a causal link or is it just correlation? But what we do know is that this generation is in crisis. They spend a ton of time on devices, and oftentimes what they are consuming and how they are consuming the content is not necessarily benefiting their life and happiness, but in fact, even making kids more sick these days.
Is there research showing causal, or is it more correlational research?
It's starting. It's very hard to prove causal connections.
Yeah.
But it is starting to happen. Like, for instance, with emotional dysregulation, it is showing that spending more time online, it is increasing that dysregulation.
Right.
We know that.
There's a positive correlation. More screen time equals more anxiety or increased anxiety or increased depression. I know that's true in my own life. I think there's both. I can observe the positive correlations where more screen time equals all of those things. And I can also observe in my own life the negative correlations. When I'm at zero porn consumption, which has been the case for a long time now, when I'm at zero porn consumption, I see a decrease in those things and an increase in happiness or life satisfaction. So just on an anecdotal level, that's how I feel.
Yeah. And we see that we have seen the research even reaching into other themes like social media. There have been studies that say young adults that quit social media for a season, that they have found amazing health benefits when it came to depression, like depressive symptoms actually decreased during that time. And even there's a study that I love that's about younger kids, fifth graders, that went into nature for 5 days to shed all devices just for temporarily to be together and experience their surroundings.
Yeah.
And they were much better at reading emotions after those 5 days, which is not necessarily health, but it does tell you something about how it's all connected to our emotion. And we know from happiness research that what makes us happy is actually connecting to people, connecting with each other. If we feel there's meaning in these relationships, we generally feel better. Now, of course, we have social media that's connecting us to each other. That's great. But the question is that decreasing our feelings of loneliness? Is that increasing our feelings of genuine connection? Or is that more something where we are observing other people's lives all the time and certain beauty standards and certain lifestyles that we envy and we would like to have? So it's very much also, how do we spend our time online and how do we use it?
So is it safe to use the word crisis in this scenario? Is it a crisis?
I would say crisis is very fitting. Yes. And if you talk to young people, we have interviewed a lot of young people. I have worked with young people for many, many years. They would say it's a crisis. They would say, hey, I know this is not making me happy. I wish I had better friendships. I wish I had better online connections. I wish we weren't always on our phones, but we are.
Yeah.
And I feel like they often say that it feels like a glass or it feels like a separation, but we don't know how to change it necessarily. And that's where we come in and say, hey, you're powerful. You have a lot of tools that you already have and you can develop, and you can use technology as a tool, but also enhance your offline life in a way that it turns into something really beautiful. It's in your hands.
So you've basically dedicated your life to this mission and to helping children. I'm wondering if you can speak to what is digital literacy and why is that the first line of defense?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Digital literacy, I think, is crucial, and we need it on two levels. The kids often, you know, we often call the kids digital natives. I'm in my 30s, so sometimes I'm like, I have no idea what apps you're using and what's going on, even though I've devoted my life to this. Like, I can barely keep up with the new developments.
Oh, yeah. Technology moves fast.
So do I call myself literate to a degree? Yes. And to it, what I think is super important is that we learn with the kids and with the young people. And what I mean by that is I think there's such loneliness already in this rising generation because they are not connected, because they are spending so much time on screens, because they are not experiencing life together. And then they are, you know, on these platforms all the time. And then they are seeing all these things and we are not there. We are often not there because we're like, this is too overwhelming. It's just a phone. We don't know how to speak about it. And that's where I think digital literacy is so key, that we are saying like, hey, I want to join you there. I want to see the platforms you're using. I want to see what's going on. I want to hear about the struggles. And what does that do? It removes shame. It just leaves the room. If we do it in a way that it's like, I want to learn with you. I might not know all the apps. I do know a lot about life. I do know a lot about what makes a life a good life, what makes healthy relationships.
Yeah.
And so in that, I think we can merge and learn together. And ultimately, that's where we come in with our book and say, value-driven media use is key, because if I know who I am, if I know where I'm going, then I can put the things that I'm experiencing and doing online in that grid. If I know my identity, I know, hey, I'm a good person. I have a good journey ahead of me. I have goals. Yeah. I have vision. Maybe I should stay away from that because that is leading me off track. So digital literacy to me is much more than change your passwords regularly, install a filter, but really owning what I am doing online.
Wow.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, I like that explanation a lot. You've said that you do this, it's full-time work for you now.
Yeah.
Are you speaking to pornography with children, or more speaking to their parents and then they speak to the children?
Both.
Okay.
Yeah.
How do those conversations or trainings go?
The parents often are completely oblivious. I would say, oh, not my kid. It's not my kid. It's out there somewhere. We're okay, like, no, yeah, yeah. The kids are literally placed in Las Vegas, you know? And you're like, okay, figure Las Vegas out on your own. Just go ahead, have a great time and you'll be great.
Can you elaborate on that example? Just to elaborate a little bit more on that Las Vegas example. What do you mean by that?
So I would say, porn is very omnipresent on the internet. And I'm sure we agree. And the porn that the kids are seeing, it's not just soft porn, but it's catered to habituated users. So it's catered to people that have been consuming porn for a long time. So it's like, let's make it, you know, as extreme, as graphic, as violent, as we can to keep you hooked, for you to want more. We have been greatly impacted by Gary Wilson's work, who talks a lot about porn on the brain and what it does. We have a very, very scientific approach. And then also the porn is oftentimes brutal. It's brutal towards women. It's brutal towards children. It doesn't cover consent, all of these things. And kids are discovering that so early on and don't know what to do with it, because we have a parent generation. I don't want to talk about sex. I never learned to, my parents didn't talk to me about sex. That'll be okay. Hopefully. Yeah.
And we didn't grow up with this accessibility or with
not
this
that
content.
Accessibility. It started sort of with my generation.
Yeah.
But even then, we discovered it later, I would say, because it was
we were adults once, because the smartphones came out around 2007. So we were, because you and I are similar in age, and
yeah,
we were adults when you had that type of accessibility.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And I think it's great that you bring up the smartphone. It's like, we did not have internet in our back pockets available 24/7 in our bedroom. Maybe, you know, some people had a laptop who, like, I'm sure, you know, it was out there,
right.
And porn started flooding the internet really early on, unfortunately, because there wasn't any robust regulation, and sex sells and makes a lot of profit. Yeah, but what we are seeing is the kids, they often want to talk about it. They feel burdened often by what they are seeing. Some feel shame, some feel it's just a part of life. But I have not met one porn user who would just tell me, oh, this is just amazing, and I just love it, and I know it's good for me. Like, yes, there are sometimes these elements, of course, it's exciting, it, you know, it fuels us like nothing else. You know, it has this moment of like, oh my gosh, this is exciting.
Yeah, it spikes the reward pathway. Like, there's a reason why people turn to pornography, but that doesn't mean it's going to increase or improve their life satisfaction.
Yes, I love how you put that. I couldn't agree more. Yeah. So what we need really is parents, educators, all kinds of people who say we need to find a way to talk about these issues, and not in a sugar-coated way. We interviewed Gabe Dean for our book, who is a former porn user, and he would call himself a former porn addict because he just literally couldn't have sex anymore without a computer screen. So if you talk about addiction, I think that's a pretty graphic example right there. And he wasn't moving away from pornography because of any moral decision, but literally because he's like, this is like impacting my love life. And he says we cannot sugarcoat these discussions. Like, if we don't talk about real things surrounding it, the humiliation, the degradation, but also what it's doing to the brain, what it's doing to us in terms of connecting with each other. I know a lot of people who are hurting that are younger than me because they cannot find that right person that matches them. And I'm not saying everyone should get married. I'm not going to put that on people. I'm just saying we have to see why people are so unhappy. And if you see how much time they are spending on porn, how much time they are consuming, and what the messages are that are feeding their brains all day long, it doesn't have much to do with loving each other, serving each other, connecting at a heart level and not just a physical level. All of these things that is completely absent. So we have to ask, what is this media doing with us?
Right.
And what is this media doing with the young generation? And I don't want to shame anybody. It's not their fault. But I think it's something seriously wrong that there's just no protection. It's like, oh, 5 years old, I talk to dads. They have, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 year olds that have stumbled upon porn, have gotten hooked, and they don't know what to do. And that shouldn't be the case.
Right. Those who create pornography label it adult material. And yet most kids see pornography by age 13, according to research.
Yeah. And kids that haven't developed their identity, not even their sexuality. I get that it's massively confusing and it has to have an impact, maybe a traumatic impact for some, maybe just a confusing impact for some.
Right.
I'm not saying it's all the same, but it's definitely, it cannot lead to a healthy place and it's not okay.
So you mentioned that the kids want to speak with their caregivers, with their parents about their porn consumption or about porn consumption or about porn, generally speaking. And I just want to push back a little bit on that, because
that's good.
I think that internally, deep down, they do want someone to speak to. They want to experience that cathartic or that catharsis that can happen from having those conversations.
Yeah.
But I would say on a surface level, they oftentimes don't want to have those conversations.
That's good.
Can you speak to that a little bit? And
yes.
And what you've seen, how, like, I just think it's important to speak to it, because as a parent, if parents listen to this and then they go try to talk to their kid, and then their kids, they're like awkward and they just don't want to talk about it. What can parents do to continue with those conversations?
I would say, yeah, of course, pornography is an awkward topic to talk about at times. And one of the things that we do when we do, when we speak in schools, is we give kids a survey to fill out. Like, what are some of the hottest topics? What are some of the things you want to talk about? And they often mention porn. I think there is a huge interest to cover these issues. Now, do you want your mom, do you want your dad to have this awkward conversation about sex or porn? They might not necessarily express that. I fully agree.
Right.
But I do think they are searching for direction when it comes to their lives.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So what it can't be this awkward conversation. It's like, okay, now let's talk about porn, which is hard. Because yeah, it is, it might be a tough topic, but I love to approach it with a lot of science, like, and a lot of vision. Mm. Like, if I am, hopefully my goal is to be an inspiring adult.
Yeah.
That can be a good role model. If I model a good relationship, for instance, let's say with my husband, and say, oh my gosh, healthy sexuality is such a good thing.
Oh yeah.
And it's really cool if you're just in love with one person and you don't have a million images in your mind all day long.
Mm.
Like something like that, you know. And even depending on the age of the child, one thing that I find really cool is that if you have teenagers, they want to understand things. If you say, like, wow, this, for instance, Billie Eilish, she did an interview on porn a couple months ago, and she was like, porn literally destroyed my brain. I let men do horrible things to me. It was absolutely awful. And looking back, I know that porn groomed me to be okay with these things. And I would go to like an older teenager and say, hey, you think that's true? Mm. You know, what? Or is she just being crazy?
Push,
you know,
back a little bit and spike the curiosity.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's good. That's a good tip. I like
totally.
That.
And I think what kids don't like, and again, younger kids need boundaries, not younger kids need a level of protection, but older kids, they wanna be leaders. They wanna be people that we trust, but also that can make up their mind. And if we can find a way to let them be leaders in this process of like celebrating when they are making good choices, and I'm not even just talking about porn, but making good decisions, like if they own their online choices, that's the ultimate dream.
Right.
And I'm not saying like that never comes easy. I'm not saying, oh yeah, here, you know, you have your phone, you figure it out. And you know, if it's too much, just put it away. Like, it's pretty addictive as it is, even for us adults. I know that.
Oh yeah.
That's where you get kids that are like, really? Let's talk about this, you know?
Right. Well, we have three kids and two of them are getting up there close to the double digits, right? They're 8 and 9 years old. And I feel like they're 8 and 9 going on like 20. They think they know a lot. They think they know everything.
Yeah.
So I like that you're speaking to helping them, because from their perception, they think that they're 16. Like they think their maturity levels at a 16-year-old's maturity level.
Uh-huh.
So I like that you're speaking to the importance of having good, healthy, not sugar-coated conversations.
And I think what we need to do in our day and age, it's more important than at any other time, is we need to raise leaders. Like, hey, I believe in you. You can make a difference in this world. Like, I know this stuff is crazy addicting. This is affecting me too. But even, let's say, how we are interacting with screens around friends, like even something simple, I think we can empower kids to be the ones that set a different tone in a different climate. It's not easy, but I think that's where change can happen, because ultimately it's these kids that didn't choose to inherit this world that need to be leaders in this, let's call it fight, because I think it is.
Yeah. So I'm wondering if you can speak to social media / tech breaks. And I know that you have done one yourself. You and your family did a break, and it was pretty amazing feat. It was a pretty amazing feat what you what your family accomplished. Can you tell us about your digital reset that you did for 30 days on the Appalachian Trail?
Yeah, so that's exactly what we did. We said, let's shed devices as much as we can. We did have a phone for looking at campsites and looking at water supply on the Appalachian Trail. But we said, we want to see what it feels like to live without devices. And we had the luxury to carve out 30 days. I know that's the extreme version, and most people don't get the chance in their daily lives to do that. But last year we did. And I can tell you, we were about to give up after day two. So yeah, it wasn't just a glamorous time, but we said,
That's what I was going to say, because I rode my bike across the United States. And I think before I did it, I had this uninformed optimism. I was like, let's go do this. But then on day, maybe even like 2 hours into it, I'm like, I have this informed pessimism, and I'm like, nope, I can't, I don't know if I can do this. Did you experience that then?
Oh, I believe it. Yeah. And we had little kids too. And I'm like, oh, that's going to be so romantic. They will have us just to themselves, and they'll be in nature. And of course, after day one, they were like, what is this? Like, we don't like to be doing this. And it was like freezing cold at night.
How old were your kids?
They were 2 and 4.
Wow.
So yeah, they're still quite young. And we had these backpacks. In fact, it was probably an easier time to do it than if they were just, you know, starting to hike on their own. Because if our son, he hiked a bunch, but when he couldn't keep going, we just put him in the backpack.
Yeah.
And my husband had this wheel that he was pulling behind him that had all of our luggage. We just wanted to see, what does it feel to do an actual reset, where all these messages, all these connections from technology are not impacting your lives anymore, for a season. And it wasn't like I said, we had phones, we connected with our families. Hey, we are safe. Everything is good. But we didn't do social media. We didn't do any Googling, any scrolling, any app using outside of that. And it was quite the interesting experience, because it was ridiculously hard at times. Sometimes we didn't have water, and we had to depend on other people to get some water to get through the day, because some spring was dried up. Sometimes we always had to clean our tents and our backpacks a certain way to protect us from bears that live around the Appalachian Trail and smell any food. But I can say that I have never had a live season that brought us together as this experience did. It wasn't initially, it took weeks for us to see the benefits, like literally weeks. I think weeks into it. I would say the first 2 weeks, it was a lot of, there was a lot of wrestling still, like a lot of hard. And then somehow we arrived at the sweet spot as a family, where everyone sort of got in a groove and was like, this is actually really cool.
Oh, wow.
And by the end of it, our kids didn't want to go home. And we were like, yeah, we're kind of ready to, like, let's maybe transition home. Wow. Yeah. But it was life changing. And it was amazing, because for me, it just connected to me to my inner core again, as no other experience ever has to that degree, because you're like on these mountains going up and down, and all of a sudden your brain opens up. And it was incredible to feel like I'm alive as a whole human being. I think so often we are like, we have all this information, all this knowledge, like our brains are exploding all day long with good stuff, with bad stuff, and I still need to do this, this, and this. But what about our soul? I think oftentimes our soul is so malnourished. And when we did that hike, it was like, I could connect with it again.
Disconnecting from technology can help us feel all the emotions that actually occur in our lives. You spoke to some of them, like frustration or sadness or depression.
Yeah, it's so true.
Yeah.
It's so true. Cause what are we doing when we are on devices? So often it's external. Like, it's like, okay, what's everyone up to? What is the world up to? What is the war up to? What is the shopping up to? Right. But what is actually in here? What is it that makes us human? What is it that brings me joy, that makes me come alive? I don't think we get these answers through technology. Sometimes we listen to an audiobook and get super inspired, or we watch like a short video clip that lifts us up. Like, I absolutely believe that it can be a great tool, but oftentimes I think it can be a distraction. And also I think it strips us of experiences. I would say I'm a pretty adventurous person sometimes.
Yeah, I'd say that too. Based off the fact that you hiked the Appalachian for 30 days with a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old and your husband. That's
sometimes
pretty
cool. We joke. My husband says it's because I'm German. I don't know. I did grow up around a lot of nature, and I do like challenges. I'm just that kind of person.
That's cool.
But I grieve about the fact that I think oftentimes my kids and that whole generation, they are stripped of real life experiences. And I want to live countercultural in that I want to pave experiences for myself, but I also want to do that for my family and those around me, because I feel in these real life experiences where I feel the challenge, I feel the raw and real, I feel the hunger, and I don't have any food left. Like, there's something that happens in that shapes us. And I just love that. Like, one thing I think a lot about is, what skills do I want my kids to have? Like, I don't want them to be douchebags. I just don't want them to be douchebags. And yeah, they're still young, and of course they have hard moments, but yeah. I want them to be resilient. I want them to feel confident and strong. I want them to face an obstacle, even online, and being like, hey, I know who I am. I know what I'm capable of. And I want to instill that in my kids early on. So sometimes I like to push them a little.
Right.
Not too much, in a way that, you know, it hurts them to a degree that they couldn't handle it. But sometimes I think kids need to be pushed.
Oh, 100%.
Kids need to be challenged. Like, even on this trail, we had times where we would really cheer our son on to hike that little mountain.
That's cool.
Like, hey, don't just sit on the backpack. Like, you can do it.
That's
and
a
it
big
build
part
a confidence
of
in him.
Yeah, exactly. That's a big part of healthy development, is pushing ourselves a little bit past our current capabilities and learning.
Yeah.
And that's really cool.
And I think my generation, sorry, I don't always want to compare. Of course, there's nuances, but it's I think it's pretty proven that we typically spend a lot more time outside. We spend a lot more time exploring without being monitored all the time. And sometimes it's hard to recreate that, but I do think it's very healthy for kids to tap into that experiential side of life, where it's like using all the senses. I can listen, I can hear, I can feel, because it grows the whole person, the whole human.
What if someone can't do 30 days on the Appalachian Trail? Any suggestions?
I have this this philosophy that when talking about technology, when we take something away, we need to replace it with something better or more meaningful. And if you talk to a young teen, they might not feel that in the moment, because we are having, you know, all these quick dopamine kicks online, let's say through a computer game or through a like or through a quick porn video that someone is watching. But we can't just take something and say, okay, that's it. You know, but we have to think long and hard about what is it that we want to build into our lives, and then add technology to it. And we had to do that when we came back from the trail. It's like, what space do we want to give technology, and what about the rest? So if anybody wants to do a reset, and may it be 30 days, may it be less, I think 30 days is great, because that takes it a minimum of 21 days to develop a new habit. We know that. So if it's a longer stretch that we can shut certain technology down, then it's better. It's more beneficial because it does help us to shift some things around that I think can be more sustainable. We right. also have to really decide, what do we want to fill that time with? Let's say you can do that with the people you live with. May it be your family, and say, what do we want to do? You can designate a certain time frame and say, this time, whenever people come home from work or school, we'll do it extra fun. Like write a list, think about the things even locally that you can do, and say, hey, why? It's because we want to grow together. We want to find each other again. We want to see how it's like, and we can talk about it. And if it's that motivation, I think a lot of people would be up for it, you know? Right. So yeah, that's one thing that I find absolutely key to talk about. What do we replace that technology, that time that we spend on technology with? And how does it enhance our connections? In our book, we talk a lot about the loneliness crisis and how giving somebody that's lonely a smartphone is like pouring gasoline on the fire of loneliness. It's not necessarily the origin, but I think it enhances it. So I think it needs to be a time that's for reflection for myself, but also for connection with one another.
I want to give you an opportunity to tease your book a little bit more. So I'm wondering if you can speak to why our listeners should go and navigate to Amazon or to your website and purchase your book.
So our book was written for people who feel a little lost when it comes to speaking about these hot topics with this rising generation. It gives us a language that we can use to approach mainly teenagers, because that's who I worked with for more than 10 years, to be like, hey, let's have these hot conversations, these hard conversations, and find a way forward. It really is, it is meant to be empowering for anyone that wants to raise up this generation to be the first line of defense against online harm and exploitation. And in the book, we call it the RUMP model. It's very relationship based. That's our starting place. If we figure out how to connect with each other well, with this generation well, then we can learn to understand, to mentor, and also put the right boundaries. But in our book, we say boundaries is the thing that comes last, because it's the addition to what we are already doing with each other. And then we have a lot of challenges throughout the book where we want to challenge our readers, our audience, to say, hey, let's leave your phone in a drawer for 5 hours. Was it challenging? Why not? So we want to be a bridge between generations, where parents, educators, teachers feel like, oh, I can tackle some of these issues, and I have a tool here that can help me bring out some of the things up and also bring some more understanding. It's very research-driven, very evidence-based. We do talk about porn, we talk about gaming, we talk about social media, and say, okay, let's put some frameworks around that. What is it, again, what that makes us human, that we actually desire as people, and where is technology sometimes hijacking that, and how can we reverse it again into something positive, where we fuel the real humanity inside of us, and then we plug technology into that.
How else can we support you, Lisa?
We are working on a course for young people. We are working together with a bunch of professionals in the educational world. And we are looking for young people and also educators to come and support us with their inside knowledge to build something that's really, really robust. So our nonprofit is currently branching out and taking on this very project to say, we don't just want to have a book, but we also want to have something where we can get together in a small group setting and wrestle with some of these topics over the course of a couple of weeks. So if you are interested in that, please reach out at lisa@wiredhuman.org.
Lisa, we want to leave you with the opportunity to have the last word during this conversation. So if there's anything that's been left unsaid or that's on your mind or heart still that you want to reemphasize, now is the time to do that.
I just want to say, I believe in this rising generation, and I believe in us as parents, educators, teachers, anyone that really has a heart for this rising generation. I know we are facing major challenges with this, I would call it, digital crisis. But I think if we can build into the core of what makes these kids human, if we can really build into who they are, I think they will own their online choices and they will succeed. And that is my goal and mission for all of us. I know it can be hard and challenging, but I also have a lot of hope and wish you all the best.
I love that. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Consider Before Consuming. Consider Before Consuming is brought to you by Fight the New Drug. Fight the New Drug is a non-religious and non-legislative organization that exists to provide individuals the opportunity to make an informed decision regarding pornography by raising awareness on its harmful effects using only science, facts, and personal accounts. If you'd like to learn more about today's guest and the conversation we had, you can check out the links included with this episode. If you find this podcast helpful, consider subscribing and leaving a review. Consider Before Consuming is made possible by listeners like you. If you'd like to support Consider Before Consuming, you can make a one-time or recurring donation of any amount at ftnd.org/support. That's ftnd.org/support. Thanks again for listening. We invite you to increase your self-awareness, look both ways, check your blind spots, and consider before consuming.
Can I be honest for a second? A lot of people who listen to this podcast already know they want to quit porn. That's not the problem. The problem is doing it consistently, when no one's watching, when it's difficult, when it's late, when you're stressed. Instead of just relying on willpower, rely on our friends at Relay. Relay gives you structure, tools, support, connection, so you're not fighting alone and starting over every week. If that sounds like what you've been missing, check it out at ftnd.org/joinrelay.
Struggling with compulsive sexual behavior or betrayal trauma can feel isolating, not just for individuals, but for partners and families too. But healing is possible, and you don't have to navigate it alone. From June 25th through the 27th in Nashville, Tennessee, the Hope for Healing Conference brings together individuals in recovery, partners, couples, and professionals for 3 days of expert insights, meaningful conversations, and real connection. You'll hear from experienced voices in the field, gain practical tools for healing, and connect with others who understand what this journey can look like. Whether you're seeking support personally or professionally, this space is designed to meet you where you are. To learn more or register, visit csbdhopeforhealing.org and use code PODCAST25 for 25% off.
Here at Fight the New Drug, we talk a lot about the impact pornography can have on mental health, relationships, sexual health, and the world around us. And if you've felt that impact personally, it's important to know this. You're not alone. That's why Relay exists. Relay is an app designed to give you real support as you work toward lasting change. It connects you with a small, private group of people who understand what you're going through, people who show up when it matters. Relay isn't about shame or judgment. It's about accountability, encouragement, and learning how to move forward together. And if anonymity matters to you, Relay has you covered. No names, just support. If you're ready to stop doing this alone, try Relay for free today at ftnd.org/joinrelay.